Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. Did you know it says it is vain for you to rise up early and to sit up late? To eat the bread of sorrow, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. But notice what it says in verse 3. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. And so I know we have a couple happy guys in here. Children really are a heritage of the Lord, and they're a blessing. And I've said this before, but it does grieve my heart the way our society has changed their view on that. Most look on children as an annoyance and a burden, and that's just not the case. None of you guys are annoyance or a burden. Maybe sometimes, but not very often. But really, you're a blessing. And tonight, I really know that whenever we have a business meeting, we're almost 45 minutes into the service, so I'm going to keep this short, okay? So if it seems like I just stopped and didn't really finish the message, that's probably because that's what I did. And we'll pick it up and finish it next time, okay? So first thing I want to say to you is that I might have given an impression that I need to correct a little bit. When we've gone through the first four, I think this is the fifth, or I don't know exactly what message. This is probably the fourth, could be the fifth. Anyway, before we were talking about pretty much younger children, elementary age children, because we were talking, like last lesson was on the five C's of discipline, and those principles of discipline, not that teenagers don't need any discipline, but most of that is geared toward younger families. And I said that, and I think you understand that. But in that, I might have said something along the line that if you don't get them trained by the time they're 10 years old, then you've pretty much lost the battle, and too bad, kind of thing. And that's what I want to say. That's not what I mean, and that's not true, okay? If you have teenagers, don't think that all hope is gone, okay? Because teenagers still need training. They still need some correction. They still need parenting, and they still can be parented. And so we're going to talk about parenting teenagers for a little bit, okay? Tonight and next week, and I don't know, maybe another one after that. I have a book, but I have it in a Kindle form, so I brought my Kindle tonight. I'm going to read you a letter out of this book. This book, if you have teenagers and you want a book, you can read. Some of the things I'm putting in these lessons will come from this book, but if you'd like to have the book, it's a book by an author that I know Cameron would be familiar with because he went to West Coast. Pastor Kerry Schmidt, pastor's up in Connecticut now, but he wrote a book called Passionate Parenting. And it's geared toward parents for teenagers, okay? But in the beginning of this book, this is the heading on the page. It says, "The Saddest Letter I've Ever Read." And I'm going to read you that letter. It comes from a young person. It says, "Dear Pastor Schmidt, a few years ago I read your books, Hook, Line, and Sinker, Discover Your Destiny, and Life Quest." Have you read those, Cameron? Any of those? Hook, Line? Some of them Brother Richard used for our teen Sunday school class a while back. Anyway, especially I think Discover Your Destiny. And this person says they read those books and I found them to be extremely encouraging and instructive. These books showed me that not only do you have a real heart for young people, but also you understand us well. I am writing to ask you to consider writing a book to our parents and youth workers. Let me explain. I am a junior at a well-known Christian college. I grew up in a highly respected churches and went to excellent Christian schools. My father has been a Christian worker since before I was born. One would think that my testimony would go something like this. I was saved when I was about 5. I had dedicated my life to God, and I have been growing a lot and serving Him, and now I'm studying to serve Him full time. But that's not my story. Actually, though I did make a profession of faith when I was very young, I didn't get saved until I was 17. Since I was 12 and now into college, I have struggled with serious issues. I have found out when I went to college that I'm not the only good kid who is or has struggled with or is struggling with serious stuff. We struggle with issues like eating disorders, depression, suicide, cutting, pornography, gender identity, homosexuality, drugs, drinking, immorality, and the list could go on. We listen to wild music. We idolize pop cultural heroes. We watch dirty sitcoms. We have no discrimination in our entertainment, dress, or any aspect of our lifestyle. Obviously, I'm generalizing our problems. You would not find that every Christian young person from a conservative background struggles with these, with all of these issues. And praise God, some of us do not struggle with any of these issues. My point is that the problems that are supposed to be the bad kids' problems belong to us too. It's quite an eye-opening letter. They go on to say, unfortunately, our parents and our youth workers don't know that we struggle with these things, and they don't know what to do with us when they find out. Quite frankly, I believe that if you grab the average Christian school teacher or youth worker and ask them, what would you do if you found out that one of the kids you work with was a homosexual? They wouldn't know what to say. My point is not simply that they don't know that we struggle with or how to deal with it. I think there is a pretty simple reason why quote-unquote good kids struggle with these serious issues. And there is a solution. At the risk of being blunt, I'm going to be blunt. Our parents did not spend time teaching us to love God. Our parents put us in Sunday school since K-4. Our parents took us to church every time the doors opened and sent us to every youth activity. They made sure we went to good Christian colleges. They had us sing in the choir, help in the nursery, be ushers, go soul winning. We did teen devotionals and prayed over every meal. We did everything right, and they made sure we did. But they forgot about our hearts. They forgot that the Bible never commanded that the church teach the children about God and His ways. That responsibility was laid first at the feet of our fathers. Unfortunately, our fathers don't have time for us. They put us where we are surrounded by the Bible, but they didn't take time to show us that God was important enough to them to tell us personally about Him. So to us, Christianity has become a religion of externals. Do all the right stuff, and you're a good Christian. So some of us walk away from church, some of us stay in church and fill a pew, and many of us struggle with stuff that our parents had no idea about because they hardly know us. I think these problems stem from, first, our detachment from our parents, and second, from our misunderstanding about the essence of Christianity. A relationship and not a list of rules. I worry that many young people like me are not even saved because of misunderstandings about Christianity. I know that this has not been a well-articulated treatise, but it comes from my heart. If you're able to help us and our families, I would be so grateful. I realize that probably there's no way to fix the fact that kids my age are detached from our parents, or to straighten out the crazy stuff we struggle with. The alienation is fixed, and the scars are permanent. I know our situation is not hopeless. God is at work in my life and my generation. Among those of us who struggle and are struggling, but maybe Our younger siblings can have some help that we never had. Maybe you can write a book for our parents that will grab their attention and help them see that this is serious and that their kids need them desperately. It's quite an article, or I mean a letter, isn't it? And there's so many things in that letter. I get a little emotional even when I read it, but there's so many things in that letter that I think really do nail a lot of why sometimes kids grow up in church, in a good church, and for all intents and purposes, good families. But yet, there's somewhere a breakdown in the communication of that love and that, and you know, that, and what she said there at the beginning, she said, they didn't teach us to love God. That's kind of this, you know, the summary of it. They do all the right external stuff, but they don't have the heart for God. And that's what we want to try to help us to figure out how to do that. So I have a lot of things. I'm gonna try to be brief tonight, and we'll go into more details next time. But I wrote down some things. I thought this through a little more. And when you think about your goals for your kids, we talked about this earlier, about goals and stuff. And, you know, essentially I said before that my goal is that my children would do the will of God. But what does that look like? And I put down just two things. You know, one day before long, Rachel's going to get married and she's going to leave us. And then Josh is going to, you know, he's going to want to one day move out and so on. And then we're done. I mean, then we're, you know, then we're empty nesters and so on. You know, what do I hope with all my heart that they do from the rest of their life? And really, it comes down to number one, that they love the Lord. More than anything else, I want them to love the Lord with all their heart. And then, if there's a second thing, I would put this, that they would have a biblical framework from which to work with in making decisions. If they would love God and make decisions based on biblical principles, you know, that's summing it up. That's what I want for my children more than anything. And so that's what we've tried to build into them. That's what we've tried to somehow instill in them, is a love for God and to know that the Bible has the answers. And when we think biblically, when we, you know, when we come up against questions and we come up against decisions and we come up against all these things, what does the Bible have to say? And how can that help us in making these decisions? All right, so I'm going to give you some thoughts on, and I've kind of phrased it this way because I don't know how else to phrase it. I wrote down the parents, this is the title, the parents teenagers need. And I'm going to give you one of those kind of parents tonight. And then we'll talk more about other kinds in the next couple weeks. But I put it down, I wrote this outline, this title a couple times. The last time I settled on the engaged parent. I was going to put the understanding parent, the connected parent, the engaged parent. But as you heard in that letter, one thing that the person said, and they're now, you know, a young adult, but they said that there's a disconnect between us and our parents, and we struggle with things our parents have no idea that we struggle with. And you see right there, you can tell there's something that engagement, that connection, that understanding is not there. So that's why I say we need an engaged parent. One thing teenagers struggle with is hypocrisy, right? We hear that quite often, and you heard it in that letter. That basically, you know, our parents made sure we did all these things, but they seemed too busy. They didn't seem to love God enough to teach us or to, you know, communicate to us. And so this hypocrisy is something that teenagers struggle with. Yes, they might have a wrong attitude, or just be looking for a way to justify their own sin. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes they pull the hypocrisy card out, you know, and say, well, you don't do this or whatever, and they're just trying to justify themselves. Sometimes that's true. But nonetheless, we need to sincerely consider if we're guilty. Teenagers especially, don't do well with the do as I say, not as I do kind of attitude that sometimes parents have. And I know parents, you know, we do that. We pull that authority. Well, you know, did you just do it because I said so? Kind of a thing. And you know, that works with young kids as far as, you know, they know that if the parent tells them to do something, they do it. That's the rules, and they need to be trained obedience, and that's good. But when the kids get to be teenagers, and now you're telling them to do things, but they see that you're not really following that, you're not living that, then they're maturing, and you know they pick up on that, I guess is what I want to say. Most teens are not expecting parents to be perfect. We all struggle to live the Christian life, and they understand that. It's not the perfect Christian that they're looking for. It's a sincere Christian, a trying Christian that they respect. And I'm reading my notes a lot because that helps me to go faster. So that's one aspect that I picked out of that letter and thinking about. And one thing that's important is as we try to be engaged, as we try to connect, part of our responsibility is to set that example. That's been said many times. But really, we have to really examine the fact that are we really practicing what we preach? Are we really doing what we say we want our children to be doing? So our role is their spiritual nurturing is not something you can outsource or take for granted. This is another point I picked out of that letter. Christian schools, churches, Sunday schools, youth groups, etc., these are all supplemental. Do you understand? That means, you know, they're there to help, but they don't take the place of the parent and the home. Nobody has more influence on your children. Nobody should have more influence on your children than you do. And so the home is the first place. That's where they're growing up, they're learning, but then when they get, when they become teenagers, they really start to evaluate things more and judge things more. Kids, you know, teenagers can be judgmental. They're judging things, and so they believed a lot of things when they were young. They believed your parents when you're young, you know? And still to this day, Sarah does this to me a lot. If she sees something that, you know, I do something, and this is mostly in fun. It's just, you know, Sarah and I like to. And something she said, I forget, when she was up here this time. And she's like, oh, I thought my daddy always, oh, I know what it was. I said something about I was listening to an audio Bible as I was eating my breakfast one morning. And she said, my daddy always reads his Bible before he eats breakfast. And I said, yes, Sarah, he still does, you know. But, you know, that's the kind of, she still has that funny innocence, you know, she likes to do that. But, you know, when you're little, you believe everything your parents tell you, right? And then when they get bigger and then they start seeing things and they go, wait a minute, now I'm not really sure if they are everything they said they're really doing, you know. And so that's why we have to be genuine. We have to be real. We have to be. And that's, you know, the greatest thing you can do for your children, I said this earlier, is to be filled with the Spirit, walk with God, love the Lord. That's the best thing you can do for any relationship. Your husband-wife relationship, your child-parent relationship. You have to be sincere. Not perfect. None of us are perfect. And we'll talk more about those things as we go. But sincere and genuine in our Christian life. And you can't outsource it. All right? So you can't just, you know, put it off on other people. The responsibility is for us. Now, I put down here, we'll talk more about this later, but there's something here that's vitally important for you to understand. This is another point. Why are teenagers highly influenced by peer pressure? We know that they are, right? But why is that? Think about it just for a second. Why are teenagers highly influenced and they're very vulnerable to peer pressure? We all are to a certain degree, but teenagers, I think, they really peek out at this, you know, kind of being, having to go along with the crowd. And really what it comes down to is they want, what do they want? They want acceptance. They want to fit in. They want loved. Isn't that true? They're looking for, you know, they're looking for validation. They're looking for acceptance. They're looking for love, of connection with people. And they're going to want that sometimes, you know, apart from just you and, you know, mom and dad. They want that from others too. That's true. But I have learned this, and I really believe this to be true. I've tested it with our kids, and it works. when you really genuinely are in a relationship that you're connected with your child, you love them, they love you, there's a respect, there's a connection, there's an engagement. We're talking about the engaged parent, all right? When you're engaged in their life, they don't have to seek that so much out there. You know, they might still value that, you know, the neighbor kid thinks they're cool too, okay? But really, you know, it's the kids that they don't get that at home. The only place they get that is at school or with their peers or whatever. So they're the ones that are really seeking it. I mean, they're just doing anything to get attention from other people. And that's just true. You might as well just, you know, believe it. That's the way it happens because that's what kids do. And so when you have a family and you have these, you know, that's why when you start young, you build those relationships, you're living every day with your kids, you're working together, you're playing together, you're praying together, you're doing everything together. And they grow up in that, and then that continues in their teenage years. I remember, you know, I could point out Corrine and other people, but, you know, her and her boys, you played like rode bikes and did everything, go swimming, go do these things together. Do that. You know, that's because if you just, you can't farm it out to the church to raise them, and you can't pawn them off on the neighborhood, the village, you know, people, that's what the world thinks, it takes a village to raise the kids. If you give your kids to the village, yeah, they'll raise them. But then you get back not what you wanted. And so it's important that we have that relationship. And if you didn't have it, you didn't really connect with them so much as a young person, and now they're teenagers, and now they're out there and they're looking for it, all I can tell you is this. Don't give up. Start building those bridges. Try to connect with them in every way you can. I'll just give you this is a personal testimony, and it's kind of a, I don't know, as you get older you tell these things because you feel more comfortable exposing things about yourself. I don't know why that is, it just is, you know, old people do that. Pastor Sasney does it, so now I can do it. you know, he tells stories on himself. But the truth is, here's what I wanted to say. And these guys, I didn't tell them I'm going to tell this, but they know it's true. There's one out of my four kids that I didn't connect with real closely. And he's not in the room tonight. So you guys know who this is, most of you. But he and I just didn't really, it was harder. I you know, his interests, my interests, you know, and it wasn't as easy. And so it's my fault that I didn't make the effort. And my wife encouraged me along the way. She said, you're going to lose him. You're not really understanding him, and you're not connecting with him. And I'd try a little bit, and it didn't seem to work, and then I quit. Now, fortunately, his mom has a very close relationship with him. And because of that, you know, he's done well. And so I'm talking about Nathan, you know, just everybody knows that. Nathan, I love Nathan. He loves me. We respect each other. But we just never really had that bond like I have with, you know, Josh. And my girls, you know, the girls love their dad. They just do. So, you know, that's just the way it was. So I'm just saying this. I'm being transparent because I'm trying to say to you, if I could go back and do it over, I would definitely make the effort to connect with Nathan better. And I'm trying today to catch up. And so I write letters to Nathan. I tell him I'm so proud of him. He's doing such a good job at school. And he knows that. He knows I love him. He knows, and he loves me, and we respect one another. But I'm saying that that's so important. It's so important that you connect with your kids. So number one, be real in your Christian walk. Be genuine, be sincere, and live for God. If you want your kids to, you've got to. Number two, build that relationship, connect with them, love them, be engaged in their life. That's so important in the teenage years. I told you about this thing I brought, and I really want to wrap up. But here's the whole thing. I'm not reading it all, obviously. But I highlighted what I thought I could read. And if you want the thing, you can have it. But it's about the teenage brain. And basically, I can just tell you what it says here. Basically says that between 12 and 20, did you know that your teenager's brain gets totally rewired? This is kind of new research, but you know, we talk about the importance of the adolescence and how they learn so much before the age of 3, and all that's true. But in the teenage brain, according to these neuroscientists, they, you know, there's gray matter and there's white matter. I didn't know that. I learned it in here. But, you know, basically the white matter is the connections that transfer information from the gray matter to gray matter, kind of a thing. And the last one to get connected is the frontal lobe, you know. The frontal lobe, you know what that is? That's where Decision making. Yeah, decision making. And it's like, you know, it's why teenagers, you know, do stupid things. It's because that connection's not totally made yet. And when I say stupid things, I mean, you know, go down the road 400 mile an hour and wrap their car around the tree and things like that. Because those kind of decision-making things, those reasoning, it's not all connected there. I really don't want to take the time to read this tonight. Maybe we'll read it next week. But it kind of just tells you that the reason why teenagers, sometimes they're very emotional, sometimes they're irrational, sometimes they seem all, you know, just going through so many changes and so on. You know, there's scientific reasons for that, okay? And so just understand that. And you have to be patient with the kid. You got to try to connect with them and understand them. And even though you go, that's, you know, you can have fun with them. And you can say, you know, that's just really silly and you're not thinking straight. And one day your brain will be all connected and you'll understand these things, you know. I mean, this lady, she's the neuroscientist, she's like, so until my kid is 20 years old, I have to be his frontal lobe for him, you know. And so I'm not letting him ride that motorcycle. I'm not letting him, you know, go do these things but it also says, one thing it does say in there is that things that young people sort of sometimes struggle and go toward, alcohol and drugs and those kind of things. And a lot of that's because of not fully developed brains and decision making. But I want you teenagers to hear this. Because all this is going on in your brain, if you introduce drugs and alcohol, it can do irreparable damage. Especially to a teenager. They're more susceptible to that because your brain's, you know, trying to do all this and then you're messing it up with these chemicals. And honestly, I mean, schizophrenia and other kinds of things, mental illnesses, sometimes are a result of young people experimenting with drugs and alcohol. And so it's very dangerous. And you just need to understand that, okay? So, anyway, we'll maybe give you some more out of that next time. But I hope I've just encouraged you tonight to really love your teenager. Connect with them. Cherish the time you have with them. And just keep praying. It's so important because, I'm going to go right to the end of my notes. You know why? Because children are a heritage of the Lord. And the fruit of the womb is His reward. That heritage, what does that mean? You understand that? It's the inheritance. It's God has given you those children. Right? They're a gift of God. And they're like arrows in the hand of a mighty man. You know what? Basically, I'll try to sum that up for you. Basically, what he's saying there is that you have an enemy, spiritual enemy. Your enemy is sin. And, you know, it condemns you, but you have a remedy for that. That's Jesus Christ. His blood takes care of that. But you have a physical enemy called death, and you're going to physically die. But what is it that you have that you can send on beyond your life? It's your children, the next generation. They're going to outlive you, hopefully, right? Lord willing. And so, as a mighty man, as arrows in the hands of a mighty man, my kids, one day I'm going to leave this world. I'm just sending them off. And I'm trying to fashion them straight so they'll fly straight, right? And as I shoot them out, they're going to go on way beyond my life. And they're you're getting shot out soon. Yeah. But in a sense, she's getting fired off here, yeah. But you know, but they're going to go beyond you. They're going to live out. And so the next generation is your children, our children. And it's so important that we understand that's the heritage. That God's given us something that's going to... What else do you have that was given to you by God that's going to last beyond your life? What else do you have? I can't think of anything. The thing that God's given me that is a blessing now and will carry on beyond me are these kids. Now, as a pastor, I'm also hoping this church. But my house, my car, my clothes, all those things, when I die, you can just throw them all in the dump. But the kids are going to go on. That's why it's important. So, let's stand and we'll pray.